So I'm speaking of perception of change. If I were to eat something salty, pizza or something like that, I could taste the saltiness, right? If I had a sweet cup of tea, I could taste the sweetness. So we perceive things. There's more light now as the sun comes out. Light changes. So the perceived change, that's a perception. It's something you can notice, just like you can notice salty. But we usually, we notice it, but we don't make a point of it, of holding our attention in that way, because there's no real point in it, unless you're a Buddhist. Usually we just chase things, pleasure and pain. So to actually pause and notice the changing nature of something, we usually don't do. And that very pause, brings you to a state of non-grasping. Whereas the desire mind is always judging, evaluating, trying to get this, trying to get that, which isn't bad. It's not bad. You have to do that. Sometimes it's skillful, sometimes it's not skillful, but there's rarely a pause. Even in meditation, you know, you're going to have some ideas of what you have to attain or get rid of, and even in meditation, this is a good one, it's a bad one, a kind of struggle, and just a pause of reflecting that this is the way it is now. So what I've been emphasizing is the use of perception of change as a kind of samatha practice. Samatha being like the more focused and concentrated practices. So for those of you who haven't been here, I've been just asking people to take simple exercises like listening to the sounds of nature and holding your attention on the changing nature of sound rather than a particular sound object. So you'll hear the builders are putting in some electrical cabling, and a wind will blow, it might start to rain, people will cough, da-da-da-da, all that. And it's very normal stuff. Now we get attracted by sharp things, loud things. You know, if they start to play the radio, that would attract you. So we get attracted by sense experience, and that's very much pleasure and pain. I like this, I don't like this. So we're attracted by beauty, repelled by ugliness, and that's the kind of reactive nature of our sense experience, which is necessary. It's biologically necessary, but you won't find liberation in that, because in the liberation or the peace of the mind is not a sense experience in the usual way. It's not a sense experience, and that's important to note. It's not the usual kind of like physical comfort. I mean, I'd love physical comfort until I'm dead. I'm not going to get it, right? So physical comfort is pleasant. It's a pleasant sense experience, and I do my utmost to get this body comfortable, but I'm not winning. I realize it's a losing battle. So as much as I would like it to be comfortable, I realize, well, discomfort is also part of my karmic predicament. And the transcendence of comfort and discomfort is an important thing to learn. And that I can do by noticing the changing nature of pleasure and pain. And that's the pause and the stepping back. In the pause and stepping back, do that, you begin to just notice that the awareness of sense experience is not sense experience. The awareness of pain is not pain. Because you can play around, like I've been asking you to toggle between sound and body, right? And listen to the sound, feel the body, listen to the sound, feel the body. And hopefully that little exercise shows you, well, there's something which is bigger than these two sense experiences, and that's awareness. And when you emphasize change, then what you actually emphasize is not so much the sense experience, but that which knows the sense experience. Huh? Well, desire is emphasizing the sense experience. It's not bad. No, it's not wrong. Another way, and so I look at that in my own way. I look at that as some kind of a samatha way of using perception of change. That's just a kind of way of talking, a kind of more focused way. And the other way, perception of change, is like Lompa Cha would teach, that this is uncertain. And he emphasized uncertainty all the time. And it's very important, say, in terms of things like self-perceptions. perception of who you are. Notice that no one can know who you think you are. No one knows what I think I am, and I don't know what you think I am. We don't have access to it. You can explain it to me, but I don't really feel. You, only I can feel what I think I am. Only you can feel what you think I am. But both are uncertain. Both are uncertain. And the principle of uncertainty is more like a vipassana way of looking at change. It's more like, no, you know, it's like an insightful, discriminating, discerning, intelligent way of realizing that my perception of you is uncertain. So I might see you, you're looking kind of sour-faced when you're meditating. I think, oh, you're really depressed. And then I ask you, actually, no, I just have no musculature in my, like, I look like a, I've seen pictures of me meditating. I look like a bloodhound. Which, so you could look at me, oh, poor guy, he's meditating. But that's just a perception. That's what the mind will do when you see body language, don't you? You perceive, and sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong. But just to perceive someone as something and then say, oh, this is uncertain. You can still, you know, if it's a perception of fear, you can still be cautious. You know, it's not to say that. But just to keep the mind in a sense of adaptability. This is very, very important in terms of views and opinions. You know, views and opinions that we have about all manner of things. We make them very, very, you know, we like to take strong positions about things. Some people like to take strong positions about things. And Lokwa Cha was always, my nair, it's uncertain. And it was very, very helpful. And the example I often like to give, I don't have so many Ajahn Chah examples, but there we were moving into Chitthurst Monastery, we were living in London, and we were going to take on board a layman who was a soldier in the German army who had survived Stalingrad and Petrograd and all kinds of stuff. He was a very strong, strong man. He was going to be our gardener. Very strong-willed, my opinion. Very strongly opinionated, my opinion. And I was concerned that we were going to let him stay at the monastery. So there was some questioning. We needed people. He seemed like a good man, but he's a bit strong-willed. Could he do community? So I went to Ajahn Chah. And Ajahn Chah had met him and talked with him. And now I thought, okay, I'm going to get the master's opinion. Right, and he knows for sure. He can read my mind. He must read everyone else's mind. And I said, so what do you think? What do you think of Walter? And he says, my nah, it's uncertain. And that was such a surprising answer. It was, and it actually, it really helped me. Because rather than then taking on Ajahn Chah's perception of this person, I began to see, well, a person is always uncertain. Because not a person isn't definite. You see me in a good mood, you think, oh, he's a nice guy. You see me in a foul mood, you think, 40 years of meditation? This is, why am I here? It's true. But if it's uncertain, you say, oh, yeah. This is the perception. And then you drop it, but you're still cautious, you still have memory, so if you know, you have someone who's really hurt you, you're gonna be careful and all that, but the sense of not fixing things, and yet being streetwise. You know, not being foolish about that. And it's very important the way we relate with each other, because if you think about it, the different people you've been in the last week, I've been all manner of people this last week, right? Just because it's just stuff, emotions, and so on. So the use of the anicca sanya, or the perception of change, is uncertain. This is uncertain. Definitions you have about yourself. I was talking about this wedding, right? And I had to give this talk, and I gave this little talk last Saturday, and I thought, not good, very dumb. Didn't really hit the mark. I'm getting rave reviews right now. My nephew's writing to me, and my brother's writing to me, and what? It doesn't compute for me. So, you know, I have a perception of what I talked about. They have a perception of what I talked about. My nah, uncertain. So then you can take feedback, you can give feedback and so on and so forth, but your mind has this kind of flexibility and stability, flexibility in the changing nature of things, And your old tendency to try to fix them down and nail them down, that can feel like a kind of security, but it's not, you know, because if I just come from fixed views and opinions, which is memory, and I enter into the present with those, I'm dead. I'm not alive to the situation. I don't really know what's going on. And yet I know people, and I know the character and so on. I'm not dismissing that. So the, like, terms of, like, meditation experience. How many times have you, I know I have, now I've got it. You know, now I've really, really, this is it. So this feeling of confidence, really strong confidence, I'll never have a doubt again. 2 weeks later, what was I confident about? A doubt comes up. Now, if I see that confidence is my nair, it's uncertain, and I know that, I perceive that as changing, then I come to where there's real confidence, is that confidence changes. And that's different. And then when I begin to doubt my practice, I say, oh, this is uncertain too. And I begin to find that place which is not dependent on confidence and lack of confidence. It's not a sense experience. It's not an emotional experience. It's not an opinion. It's not intellectual. It's just the clear knowing of things as they rise and cease. And that's our refuge, and that's the gateway to the spiritual part of our lives. So uncertain. In terms of sometimes in Wapapong, monks would have, you know, some monk would have been doing a lot of fierce practice. I remember one monk came, and he was adamant that he was, I don't know if he's adamant that he was a Buddha or something really, really powerful. And he came at Ajahn Chah, like, I've got it all sussed out. I've attained. And Ajahn Chah sent him back to the forest. This is my name. So he wouldn't get intimidated by that, right? Or Ajahn Sumedho would ask him, what attainment do I have? And Ajahn Chah said, don't know, it's your problem. It's uncertain. So where do you find certainty? And this is the kind of irony, isn't it? The paradox is you find certainty in knowing change. That's you can be certain of. And that doesn't seem like much, but once you start to practice with this in both this kind of samatha way, where you really hold a perception of change as a way of coming to the stillness of mind, and then philosophically constantly realizing this is uncertain, that brings you to peace. That's what brings you to peace. And that peace is not the same as emotional, physical, intellectual ease. You know, it's deeper than that. It can handle both. It can handle both. And it's the gateway to the transcendent. So during this retreat, if you keep both in mind, see how you can use the perception of change as a way of really stilling the mind. And then as your mind starts to create definite positions, just say uncertain, around yourself, around people, or whatever. And then yesterday, I at this meeting, I did the meditation on the heart meditation, which I like to do. That's a really helpful one to keep as a kind of constant relaxing of the mind for me. Because sometimes when we do a retreat, or just if we're really serious about the practice, we can get very tense about trying to attain to something or work out our stuff, or, you know, there's all manner of tension that comes up, which is well intentioned, but sometimes it's a bit too fierce, or a bit too willful, or there's a bit too much of me in the doing. And I think we've all been through that. So metta bhavana is a way of just giving yourself to the well-being of others for a while. And ideally it gets to a practice where it isn't just projecting thoughts of kindness to others, but just this very sense of loving attention to the way things are, friendly attention to the way things are, open attention to the way things are. That's very relaxing. I think those two are very important, that you have a good discerning sense of what teaching's about, and then all of this heart sense, this kind of openness of, all right, let this moment unfold. Let it be what it is. Let's have a look at it. What's it really like? Rather than trying to get in there and get your insight so you can get out of here and cook the bacon or something like that. You know, this kind of driving, I want to attain to something. Maybe this is more a monastic problem, or I don't know, but that certainly was my predicament when I started. So in that vein, the heart practices, and the heart is a very good place to learn how to reference in your life, to, you know, if you're at a meeting where there's a lot of tension, or a family gathering where there's a lot of tension, or you're just having difficulties, or you'd feel too tense, just to have this chakra as a reference point is very, very helpful. I find it very helpful, and to stimulate that part, because, you know, as we are intellectual beings, we are body beings, we're also chakra beings, I suppose. You know, we have chakras of energy, centers of energy, and all of us know that this energy center is quite significant. And so I found it to be a good reference point. So like if I'm worried about the monastery, you know, there's all kinds of stuff that an abbot juggles, right? All kinds of bits and pieces, people's stories and finances, and is there enough coffee in my kuti, and important things like that. And so there's a kind of, it's very easy just to carry it all like a burden. Any responsibility can be like that. And then I can feel the kind of heaviness in my consciousness, because I'm concerned abbot, which is ethically a part of my responsibility, but emotionally, that's not a nice way to live. So then to lighten up, literally, and to bring attention to your heart, to just like, when you feel like family life, or work life, or monastic life, whatever life you are a part of, gets too heavy, can you just lighten up and just say, oh, it's all right, I'm not going there. There's a something about, I call it mudita, we call it mudita, or the joy of the heart, that we have this capacity to shift our perceptions in ways which are not repressive, but ways which are actually quite joyous. And I find that, to go to the heart and say, like sometimes I'll be walking my kuti and think, oh, I don't know, got to get this, and I got to get that, like we all do that, and I say, I'm not going to go there. I'm just going to enjoy this walk to my kuti. And it's so uplifting. It's so utterly uplifting. And the upliftment's in the heart, I find. And those kinds of worrisome habits that I have, and probably you suffer from too, are just habits. And they're different than like powerful emotions. You know, if I have a very profound loss in my life, or I'm challenged in a very vicious way by something, or, you know, those are of a different caliber, aren't they? Those are hard to deal with. But just the sort of negativity of the mind that we can easily drift into, and then just be carrying the world on our back, da 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 da, and then to notice that and say, no, I think I'll just open the heart to the way things are. And that, I think, is one of the aspects of mudita. Gladness, when we do the chanting in the morning, gladness, it's a shifting away from this the burdensome nature of samsara. Because samsara is always going to be problematic, right? Anyone disagree? You know, we did a newsletter once in New Zealand, and on the back page, we had a quotation from Ajahn Sumedho's book, and it was, don't make it a problem. And that was the favorite newsletter we ever did. Everyone loved that newsletter. Don't make it a problem. Because life is problematic, right? Now, don't make it a problem. You have to deal with it, but to learn to constantly lift the heart from the heaviness of the seeming endless problems of life, because they are. There's always something to deal with, isn't there? There's always something. And these are the skills of the contemplative. With the contemplative, I've been encouraging you to notice the mood of the mind, right? And as you notice the mood of the mind, to say, well, do I want to go down that route? Is that skillful? Is there another way I could perceive life in this moment? Is there some kind of a way I could look at life in some way? And that's training. That's character. And that we're doing all the time. And then, so doing metta bhavana for me gets me in touch with that place. And then reminding myself as I go back to my kuti, and just to put it all down. And that's something you have to do constantly, unless you're enlightened. And it's not something that happens to you. It's something you have to put effort into. So let's do some sitting practice. Stretch your legs a bit if you want.